It's my great pleasure to have two people here with me who I've wanted to get into the station for a long time, actually. Probably the most experienced and long-standing musicians, practicing musicians on our island, Lloyd and Joan Whittaker from Whittaker's Music Museum, which you'll all know is up here at Artworks and is one of the tourist draw cards for visitors to the island. Good morning to you, Lloyd and Joan.
Good morning to you.
Good morning.
So it's great to have you here. So people will be aware of the Music Museum. They will have seen it there and many of them will have visited. It seems to have been around as long as I've been on the island. But tell us a little about how the museum came about.
Well, we went to Europe and England in 1989 and of course, because we were into music, we looked at all the music museums we could find. Wonderful museums, but we were disappointed because we never heard a sound. Beautiful instruments, but nothing was played. And we came home thinking, we can do something about that, because Lloyd was already playing all sorts of small instruments, as well as his piano and piano accordion. And so we got the idea of just beginning to collect a few instruments to entertain our neighbours. Now, that's how the museum started. And it grew. We got interested in collecting instruments, and Lloyd got very good at restoring them. And so gradually the museum grew until we had around 100 instruments. And at that point, of course, people began to say, as tourism visited us occasionally in New Plymouth, they began to say, you should be in Auckland. And so we began to think the same. Searched Auckland, couldn't find anywhere that we could afford to rent because all our money really was in the instruments. And so one day we heard a program about Waiheke Island. Mike Delamore was interviewed, and at the end of the interview we said, that's very interesting, we'll contact him. And after that everything happened. Mike sent someone down to New Plymouth who thought this was a good idea for Waiheke, and we had tremendous help getting here. Sabritskys were marvellous. They sent a big truck down to gather up all our instruments, and Fuller's helped by giving a discount on people coming over. So we had wonderful help in setting up here, and that's how we began on Waiheke Island.
Fantastic. So let's jump back a little. I mean, before the collection of instruments started, I mean, what, Lloyd, what drew you into music?
Well, right from a five-year-old kid living in the back country of Okoki, way back where we had it was way at the top of the road. We had to walk down about a mile before we got to a shed and the road because it was just a clay track. And but anyway, I was given an ordinary kiddie's mouth organ when I was fifth birthday. And then I nearly drove them mad, of course. But it wasn't long before I was playing Bar Bar Black Sheep and Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and things like that. And my parents thought, oh, that's pretty good. But to me, it was just absolutely natural. My two other brothers never got round to it. But that's where it started from, the simple mouth organ. And that's led into our museum with a full selection of all the band harmonicas and bass ones and chord ones. And it just goes on and on and on. And people don't know about these things. There was, all together, there was groups of people got together in bands, and sometimes up to 25 people, which we've got photographed, all dressed up in the uniforms on these harmonica people, you see. So we met up with one or two of those in Christchurch. We were down there, and we found that there's all different types. There was bass, there's chords, and you name it. And they helped us get together a good set. So now we've got a whole set of band instruments that we actually play to the public because they didn't know anything about that. And it's interesting. Not difficult, but it's just very interesting. So, and then of course it developed from there, and that led on to the little accordions that We've even got a little concertina that came from England on the sailing ship Rakaia way back in 1860s and 70s, and it was in our family from 1850. I was given that, learnt to play that concertina, and then bandoneon and all the different type of that sort of instrument, leading up to piano accordion. By that time I was doing a lot of entertainment round. And as far as the piano was concerned, Oz, I used to practice on an uncle's piano. And then when I was 8, my father arrived home being a truck driver with a huge piano on the back. And I first of all thought, well, who's getting that big piano? And next thing, half a dozen men arrived and was carried up to our lounge. And it wasn't only a piano, but it was a pianola, which I think most people would know, as a self-player, as well as being very successful. So that was my teacher until I was 12. What a teacher it was too, because we had over 100 roles, some of them, you know, 5 or 6 songs on each role, and I heard them over and over again. And to learn to play from them, I just simply closed, cut the right down to, so it was just going very, very slow. Now you can watch the keys go down. I couldn't reach an octave, of course, but I learned all these chords and arts of piano without knowing anything. I knew nothing about pianos, but by the time I was 10 or 11, I was entertaining and playing in the halls and doing a lot of work. And I think a lot of ear players out there, but they used to wonder why I was able to play quite differently to ear players, all because the pianola. So
right.
That's what I give the credit.
Yeah, it's a unique way of learning. Yeah. And what about you, Joan? How did you come to music?
Well, my father was a good musician, and he left a lot of music behind. I never actually heard him play because he died when I was very young. But my mother had us two girls taught music early on. From about 9 or 10, I began to learn. I loved learning music, and I went on through a few exams, but unfortunately, at the time I was going for grade 5, the war was on, and the examiner never reached New Zealand that year, and so I gave up on exams and just learned the wonderful classical pieces I loved from left by my father. I loved Beethoven, Rachmaninoff, and all those, Chopin, those wonderful classical musicians. And that was how I went on. And I learned for about 10 years. And funnily enough, when Lloyd and I met, where we both began to work at a photographer studio, we were both learning the same piece by Rachmaninoff. And so that got us talking together. That's how we really got going, with interest in each other. So that's really my musical experience. I was able to teach music to some degree because I had gone a certain way, and I loved musical history. So we actually were both teaching pupils for a number of years, and I would teach them for a certain time and then pass them on to Lloyd, and that worked beautifully. We had a waiting list, in fact, so very successful. But once we got into the instrumental side, we gave up the actual teaching.
So there must have been a point, you know, you were saying you were working in a photography studio. Did there come a point where music became, you know, your income and passion as well as your passion, sorry?
Yes, I'm sure it was like that, really. But I was very, very fortunate to be encouraged, and we shifted out into New Plymouth when I was about 12, I think it was. And everything by there was by ear, far ahead of ordinary players. And I was playing about 5 different type of instruments, mandolin and concertina, accordion, piano accordion, all sorts of things that I could get a hold of. And then, of course, when we got in there, people come around and used to do play for their birthdays and all that sort of thing. And then several of the neighbours said, look, to Mum and Dad, why don't you get him taught music? because I knew nothing about music, you see. So they took me down to the convent where there was a lovely Sister Mercy, and we sort of talked a bit, and then she wouldn't take any notice of anything that I did, because as far as she was concerned, and she was right, I knew nothing. So I was with her for a whole year, and the most boring time of my life, because she made, you know, just like school learning the ABC, it was that sort of thing in music, and I'm not interested in anything. I had to learn the basic little things, and it's just a boring thing. And then fortunately after that, I said to Mum and Dad, look, this is hopeless. So they found another teacher, Jordan Rogers, who was well known all over Taranaki really, because he not only was a beautiful pianist, but as a child he was probably far better than me. And then when I got to him, he was teaching from daylight till dark, and other teachers were struggling to get a dozen or two dozen pupils. But anyway, he took me on, and we had a lot of discussions, and he thought the way better for me. I was getting into show music because it's so much better than dance music. You've got to be very much more sensitive, of course, and the shows were being increased all the time. So anyway, he suggested that we did the first year and teaching on the show music. He had all the music there. He could play it so beautifully that all I wanted to do was to play as like him, thinking I never would. But anyway, right, we did that. It was a very successful year. And then next year we go there, and he said, Lord, he said, now's the time for you to start exams. He said, there's Royal Schools and Trinity College, and they're out at the end of the year, and then you sit exams, and then you go up the ladder. And talked to me about that, and he said, no, I think you should start about grade 5, which is halfway up the grades. And so anyway, that started, and the end of the year, we had to, all the music was sorted out from London, and then you had to do your scales, arpeggios, and you name it. It was a whole lot of fingering, and but anyway, when it came to the end of the year, I sat grade 5, and I passed it, and both in Royal Schools and Trinity College for both of them. So that was grade 5. Next year, grade 6, same thing happened. Next year, grade 7, something happened. All examiners passed me, but I'll tell you something else in a moment. And then it came to grade 7 and grade 8. And I always passed every exam, the theory and the practical. But I had a terrible weakness. And every time I got the results back, and you study the results, there's a place there for where they give you a comment or two. And usually every year it was like this. It was, Lloyd, you are a very, very poor sight reader. You must work on this. But I never did. You know, sure, you had to learn to ring the pieces. But you see, he was able to play all those pieces, and we would have the music until we can get the notes all right. And then we'd spend a month or two, possibly too much, about the piece itself, and we would make it much more beautiful than you would normally playing it from the music. So I could get very high marks practically. And then when it come to the sight reading, about 6 or 7 or 8 at the most out of 20. So I had to get a high price and all your scales and arpeggios. And when it gets to grade 8, it gets very, very difficult. And then go back the next year, and he said, Lloyd, this year you're going to do both Royal Schools and Trinity College, and you're going to sit to be a legalised teacher or whatever you want to go. So I was courting with Joan at the time. We got married, actually. And so I did the one exam from one, and I passed that one. So then I become a legalised teacher. But as far as Royal School of Music, I meant to do that the next year. This is their ATCL and all that sort of thing. But anyway, what happened was, after the end of the year, we got married, and then Joan had a baby, and we just got so busy And I was getting jobs of entertaining. From then onwards, I was doing broadcasting down there in the broadcasting and doing all sorts of concert work. Amazing things happened down there in live shows from the theatres. And then I got some permanent jobs. One was from, if I would know, but it was the most expensive place in town of entertaining. And oh, it was just a beautiful place. And I worked there as a pianist one or two nights a week, straight for about 16 years, I think it was. And then the other one was the broadcasting. And it just never stopped. I had about three jobs. And then it just seemed to happen that I was just flat out all the time.
Well, let's have a talk about some of the instruments that you've amassed over the years, because you've got an amazing collection over there at the museum. So what are some of the standout or favourite instruments that you've collected over the years?
Well, I think the piano comes at the top, of course. But I just love all those sort of things. The harmonicas, people never heard a bass harmonica. All the different sizes of them. And then there's a mandolin guitar, and then there's concertinas, which is in our family from 1850s. And then there's the accordions, and I've played all those sort of things. But the piano accordion, I've got a very expensive, well, several of them, but one is a very, very expensive. And I've got it in the museum, and I've got another one at home. And they really excite me, because I was earning a terrific amount of money with them down there when I was in the 20s and 30s and 40s. So that gives you a pretty... Mm. And then, of course, when we started the museum, we kept on collecting and then pulling them to pieces and rebuilding them, and you name it. Now, a lot of these things I can't do today because I'm too old, but we love doing our live shows in the museum.
And what about you, Joan? Do you have favourite pieces in the collection?
Oh, yes. I think we have to say the most wonderful piece, of course, is Paderewski's own 9-foot concert grand, built by Bechstein in 1897, and Paderewski brought it to New Zealand in 1904 for his concert tour of New Zealand. And at the end of his tour, he decided he'd sell it in Auckland, and a pianist, the McFarlane family, bought it. And it was in that same family through three generations until the third one got to the stage he couldn't keep it any longer, thought it would be great if now it could be heard by the public. And so we got first option to buy it, since we play our instruments. And fortunately, with help, we were able to do that. So we have this wonderful piece of history in our museum, which pianists love to come and play. And this is why we get pianists from overseas, concert pianists coming, because they like to play Paderewski's piano. The Polish Embassy honoured Paderewski several years ago by visiting various places around New Zealand that he had been. And because we had his piano, they came here and put a plaque on the wall, and we had a wonderful evening with the Polish Embassy and lots of Polish people enjoying some of Chopin's and Paderewski's music. So that's my favourite piece, I think. But other things I really love are the sailing ship piano. That's very, very rare now. And it's a unique thing that built for a sailing ship way back in 1837. And to think we can still play it is quite a marvel, because usually by this time, old pianos with wooden frames cannot be played anymore. But this one, because it was built for a ship, was made really strong, and we are still able to tune it and play it. And it's beautiful to look at, too. So that one. And then another one that's very interesting for people is the transposing piano, which is very good to help people like Lloyd used to be, ear players. Ear players only play in one favourite key usually, and so to help them, they built this piano that you can actually shift the whole keyboard up or down according to the key you want to play in. And that was a wonderful help. And actually, some of the some of the old pianists, famous pianists, had pianos like that. Irving Berlin was one man who could not read music, and he used a transposing piano. So that is another very interesting one. And we also have a piano built in Prague over 100 years ago that is both an organ and a piano. You can play the two together or separately. So that's quite a unique piece too. Then we have other wonderful things like our theatre organ. That's something very special. That's very rare. Built by Waters and Son in 1877. It's our oldest organ and it's our best. It's in beautiful order and just a magnificent sound it produces. So there's a few of my favourite things.
So I'm talking to Lloyd and Joan Whittaker from Whittaker's Music Museum here on Island Life. That collection, it's an incredible collection. Now, these aren't things you can just kind of pick up for a few pennies, are they? I mean, there's a lifetime of effort and money gone into this. Mm. Didn't talk a little bit about that?
We actually began to buy in old instruments, and Lloyd got very clever at restoring them. For instance, one of the first things we found was what we call a push-up pianola. And that's a pianola that is separate from the piano. It pushes up to the piano, has little metal fingers positioned over the keys, and that's what plays the piano. But when we got that, it was absolutely a total wreck. There was nothing worked inside. And Lloyd and his brother Ted worked on that for months and figured out how to restore it. And so it's still going today. Amazing. And that was so with a couple of organs too. We had an offer of the organ from the church, Presbyterian Church in Waihee. And when we got it, absolutely worn out completely. Lloyd restored that, goes beautifully now. Then a little later we found an automatic organ, and that you can play yourself or it can play roles like a pianola. That too was a total wreck. We found that in Katikati. Wherever we went on our travels during those years, we would search out the different second-hand shops, antique shops, and we found instruments all over the place, all over New Zealand actually, and brought them to the museum.
There is that wonderful feeling, isn't there, as a collector, of when you're going through a pile of junk and you find that piece of treasure.
Yes.
So the museum today, you know, you have that amazing collection there and you're both actively involved. But what is it that you are trying to achieve or pass on through the activities of the museum?
Well, number one, the trust actually owns it now. So we don't own it, but we're on the meetings, of course, and have a say. But we've got very talented people, violinists and pianists and concert pianists on our yes, and we get together every, you know, about 2 months and have a meeting and decide whether we're going to change things around a bit. And we all work together very well. We never have arguments or just discuss something and then it's either going to happen. For instance, we've got a foreground organ now from Motet gave us, which is a massive thing. And originally, of course, it was pulled by horse and cart and all that sort of thing. 122 years old, I think it is. And they absolutely spoilt it about 23 years ago. They ruined it by getting all damp and the organ and that. So they eventually pulled it to pieces and labelled it and put it away. And then about 3 years ago, I got this phone call for one of the managers and they said, look, Lloyd, we've got this fairground organ here and we can't do anything about it. So if you like, you can have it free. So after quite a few meetings with it and have a look. Look, it's such a huge job. But fortunately, we've got someone on the island that's very, very talented in restoring all sorts of furniture, and he's just a master, and he's helping us put it together. He's in charge of putting it together, and hopefully we can possibly get the figurines that just they can dance and play and all that sort of thing, and hopefully we can get it that part going. We won't worry about the noise it makes, because it'd be far too noisy, but we can put a recording behind it and have it playing, and like to have the figurines, you know, acting and all that sort of thing. So it's a project been going for 2 years, and it doesn't matter, we just do a bit at a time, and eventually we'll have it going and to what we want it happening. So that's that, and we enjoy having people coming in and having a look. We just have a look. I show them around for a while. That's for a donation. We sort of hope to get $5, and then we have the live shows, which are a live show goes for an hour and a quarter, definitely. And so that's become, over the years, very, very popular.
I suppose because, as you said before, a lot of people haven't heard a number of these instruments, and these instruments which, you know, aren't in common usage nowadays, right. You know, things like the piano accordion or the mouth organs you talked of. And I suppose that also opens people up to music. You know, it's a different kind of music, isn't it, than what people are used to?
Yes, I would like to say that this is our hope and our... this is what we built it for, was to show people that the sound of these instruments, people like us have gone to museums around the world, heard nothing, just the beautiful instruments, but we want to show people how they sound and encourage people to have instruments or to look at instruments that actually... you make the sound yourself by playing them instead of all these electronic ones. I mean, some electronic ones are marvellous, but the actually electronic things wear out, whereas the ones that are played can be restored. And, you know, we have old, very old instruments that have been restored, and yet Lloyd had a wonderful electronic accordion, which we can no longer play because you can't get the parts anymore. So we just want to get people interested in the things that used to be and show them how beautiful they are. That's our main interest, really, is to open up people's minds to the beautiful things that were made 100 years ago or more, and what they could do back there, so clever in so many ways. So people who come are quite amazed at the things we have, especially people from overseas. They are amazed to see what's in the museum, and we never have a show without people saying afterwards, "I never realised just how beautiful some of these things are and how they sounded." It brings interest to people.
And is the museum in good health? You've got a steady kind of future ahead. I mean, you both must be considering retiring from shows at some point. You know, you've put a lot of years and effort into this.
Yes, we will. But I mean, we feel that as long as we can do this and people are enjoying it, then we will carry on as long as we can. We've got to the stage where we do need a bit of help to lift things that are heavy, but in the main, we can still play the instruments that to show people the sound. And I always say, while people are enjoying it, we enjoy it. Yeah. And as soon as we see people beginning to look a bit bored, we'll know we have to stop.
All right. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you both this morning. And I want to go out on a piece of music. Now, this is you, Lloyd, from it's Lemire from your electric accordion album.
Music
for Lovers, was that right?
That's right, yeah.
So do you just want to, before we play that, talk a little bit about how the recording of this album came about?
Well, that was way, way back, because that was the first one to come to New Zealand, I think I mentioned that. And so it was a valve-operated thing, not like everything today. And a valve has a far sweeter sound than what you get today. So it was extremely, extremely popular. And so I broadcasted a few times, and people saying, look, we want to buy, can you do a record? And I said, oh, I don't believe I can. So we went together and set up, and we sold a lot of those. So we went overseas, and we had friends in New Plymouth. One friend who went for a holiday to Fiji or somewhere, and he was joking with me, and he came back. He said, Lloyd Whittaker, he said, what the hell are you doing playing over the radio and way overseas somewhere? I said, well, that's not my fault.
And but, was this the, I mean, have you done other recordings over the years as well?
Oh, yes. There's one of that we sell at the museum, which covers everything that we do, plus. It goes for about an hour, 35 minutes, something like that.
That's a DVD, actually.
It's a DVD, but that's been on Auckland radios or televisions, and then so that's still going well. And the other one is just simply my favourites from the shows. On the piano, our piano, and they sell well too. So there's plenty of them there. We order, you know.
Well, we're going to hear Lemire. Do you recall what year that album was recorded?
It was done when we were in New Plymouth. It would be
1969.
It would be 40 to 50 years ago.
Yeah, 49 years, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right. Well, look, as I said, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you both in here this morning. Thank you very much. Mm-hmm. And do highly recommend that people visit the Whittaker's Music Museum at Artworks, mm-hmm. especially on Saturday afternoon, because that's 1:30, because that's mm-hmm. when the two of you are demonstrating the instruments, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, we do bus tours, of course. We like to get 10 or more people, yeah. And they enjoy it.
Mm. Yeah, an absolute pleasure. All right, thanks very much. And here is Lloyd with Lemire. That's Lloyd Whittaker there with Lemire from his 1969 album Music for Lovers. We just spoke to Lloyd and Joan Whittaker from Whittaker's Music Museum. You're listening to Island Life on Waiheke Radio, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, which is brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery.